Waheguru, Waheguru, Waheguru. Chapter 1, Awakening of Faith. You ask me, how did the love of Sikhism awaken in my mind? The important thing is that it came as a special inspiration from the Divine Being. Otherwise, there was nothing in me to merit it. There was a natural yearning for true love in my heart from childhood. I had searched long and hard for a true and beloved friend, whose love could last unto death, but I did not find any. With all this disappointment, the spark of love present within my heart convinced me that it was the only life-giving flame, which had emerged from a mysterious fountain within, and was now flickering dimly in my inner being. The sights of nature's beauty had fascinating effect on me. In my own innocent way, I considered the whole sublime creation a miraculous phenomenon, but did not in the least know or feel that behind all this cosmos there was a supreme creator. The colorful beauty of the manifold and wonderful creation inspired me with rapturous feelings of love. The outward beauty of nature enchanted me, but when the colors faded, there was disappointment and sadness. The deep-seated love for beauty was always there. The presence of this abiding spark of love indicated that there must be some eternal spirit of life, resembling this undying flame within man, so that one could live in love without any disappointment and disillusionment. I had such experiences and intimations of immortality from childhood. Beyond this dim intimation of inner being, inner life, I knew nothing of religion and religious life. My early life thus passed in secular education. There were a number of encounters with evil and sin, but my moral nature and character remained unaffected by them. I somehow escaped the onslaught of the four cardinal sins, which a Sikh is expected to avoid. I can now say that God protected me from these evils. I could never have escaped them on my own willpower. There were three strong influences which prevailed at Lahore during those days. Firstly, there was an intellectual atmosphere of serious studies. Secondly, there was a vicious atmosphere of glamorous enchantments of sinful life. Thirdly, the religious atmosphere was made turbulent and spiritless by caustic debates and discussions between various faiths and sects. I got into the habit of attending most of these discussions, but on finding nothing but cold criticism and dry debates. I did not feel attracted towards any religion. The deep-seated spark of love within me did not find anchorage in any of these faiths. The religious atmosphere of the time can be best described in Bhai Gurdas Ji's words, Sach kinare reh gaya, kahe kahe marte Brahman molane. Truth is left aside while Brahmins and Mullahs fight in a deadly war of words. BA final examination was drawing near. I had also to appear for first year law examination. I received a letter from father in which he wrote, you have to appear in two examinations. If you want to pass, you must recite the Japji prayer in the morning and Dadas in the evening. He also sent a prayer book. I knew Punjabi language quite well, but had never read the Guru's hymns. I had never read any book on Sikhism up to this time. For selfish ends, I made God my friend. Even then, God fulfilled my desires and blessed me with the highest state of liberation, says Guru Arjan. This was a miracle which in God, the Lord worked on me. When I started reciting prayers for selfish ends, my swan-like soul, which was passionately thirsting for the pearl drops of love, got its real food and forgot everything else. The mystic significance and sublime sublimity of the Guru's hymns became so clear to me within a few days that I became restless seeker for the unseen beloved. I lost almost all my body consciousness in this spiritual search for the love of the beloved. I recited the Dadas in such a poignant and soul-stirring strain that listeners were deeply moved. At last, one day the following lines from Dadas pierced my soul like an arrow and gave me definite spiritual purpose of life. As Guru Arjan says, thou hast acquired this human frame. This is the opportunity to be one with God. All other labor is unprofitable. Seek the company of the holy and glorify his name. Strenuously prepare to cross this terrible ocean. Thy life is being wasted in worldly enchantments. The meaning and spiritual fervor of these lines pierced my heart so deeply that there arose a perpetual yearning in my soul for a union with the Lord. I lost all interest in studies. Even in the classroom, I kept a textbook on the desk while I secretly read various selections from the Guru Granth Sahib. Like Bhai Vara, Bhaktivarni, tears rolled down my eyes as I read them. Only in the Bible period I applied my mind to religious studies and discussions. Whenever there was a debate on comparative study of religion, I succeeded in showing the importance of the Sikh ideals and thoughts. In all periods, my mind was completely absorbed in thoughts about God, and I did not think of anything else. Even when I came to the Nabha house, my residence, my mind was actively yearning and praying for God, and I neglected my studies. Some fellow students wrote to my father that I had suddenly developed a religious madness and was neglecting studies, so someone should come and take care of me. Father was seriously upset and worried by the news. He came in hot haste, and on his arrival he saw me, reading a book of hymns and tears flowing from my eyes as I read it. Father gave a long homily, persuading me not to neglect my studies, but I said in all humility that it was he who urged me to recite the prayers every day. Before that, I was utterly devoid of religious thoughts. He, however, gave a long discourse and explained many things in his own way. With my head lowered, I listened to him in silence. After saying and suggesting many good things, he went away. But the condition of my mind remained the same. From then onwards, I tried to conceal my inner yearnings and sadness. Vairag from people. I did not express my feelings and sentiments to anyone, and continued studying and reciting sacred hymns, secretly, fearing that someone might report it to my father and upset him. While I was answering the examination papers, I was at times so overwhelmed by rapturous religious emotions that I could not write a word, but at times my pen moved so fast that I scarcely knew what I was writing. A strange incident took place before I sat for examination. One day, I was returning from college thinking that I should meet and seek guidance from some saint who had achieved a high spiritual state. Suddenly, I saw a yogi dressed in woolen robes. As he walked in a carefree manner, he appeared to be deeply absorbed in spiritual self-intoxication. When he came close to me, he cast such a piercing look at me that I felt intensely drawn towards him. I threw my books and followed him in a heedless craze. Bhakt Kabir's following slok was ringing in my mind. Say Kabir, leave not the company of the saint. Follow his footsteps on the path. On seeing him, the mind becomes pure. On meeting him, you remember the name of God. I followed him immediately. One of my companions picked up my books and followed me. I persuaded him not to accompany me, but he would not turn back until I also went back with him. Another slok of Kabir reminded me that I should meet the saint alone. Saith Kabir, when you go meet a saint, do not take anyone with you. Turn not your back, but go ahead, come with what may. Such thoughts from my readings of scriptures came to my mind repeatedly, and I somehow succeeded in sending my companion back. I followed the yogi and felt impelled by some unknown power to follow him. I lost all sense of shame, hesitation, or discrimination, and followed him in hypnotic fascination. I even forgot where I was, and in which city and on which road I was moving. I did not take my eyes off his personality, even to look sideways. My eyes were fixed on the carefree gait of the yogi. Like a shadow, I followed him at a distance, but I was afraid to get too close to him. Many sweetmeat vendors offered him sweets. Fruit sellers gave him fruit, but he did not care to accept anything. He did not even look at them. Although he was walking with his back towards me, his magical eyes appeared to be fixed on me and reflected from his back. It was the sight of these fascinating eyes that was continuously dragging me on. At last, we reached a small fountain in the courtyard of the High Court, then known as the Chief Court. Water was perpetually flowing out of the fountain, and the water basin around it was always full. There was complete solitude in the place, and the atmosphere was really peaceful. The yogi took off his woolen robes and sat there almost naked with his matted hair flowing on at his back. He looked at me sternly, probably to frighten me, but I did not fear from him in the least. From a distance I watched his strange actions. He then drank some water from the fountain basin with cupped hands, and then with closed eyes and folded hands he lay prostrate on the ground in profound salutation. I felt that the yogi was a man with a deep spiritual vision, capable of seeing the past, present, and future. It appeared that with this vision, he saw the all-pervading presence of the perfect Lord in front of him, and he was offering devout salutation to the Infinite Spirit. A sensational thrill passed through my body at that moment. The recitation of Japji resounded within my whole being in a sweet musical tone. I felt a little giddiness. And then all the earthly sights disappeared from my sight. Then I suddenly felt elevated to a sublimer state which I had never experienced before. I could see only endless space of sublime realm. My ears heard the recitation of Japji resounding from within. I could neither see the yogi, nor the fountain, nor the garden in front of me. Then there was another wave of giddiness, and I fell prostrate to the ground. Even in this fall, I did not feel hurt, but felt peculiar joy. After some time, I did not know how to regain consciousness. When I was on my feet again, I saw the same garden and the same fountain and the water basin, and the yogi was still lying prostrate on the ground in devout salutation to the infinite. I squatted on the ground near the yogi. After some time, he got up and, picking up his blanket, wrapped it around his body. He looked at me and hinted by a sign that I should go back, but I could not leave him. He walked on the mall in a carefree and leisurely sporting gait, and I followed him. After some time, we were about 2 miles outside of the town near Lawrence Garden. On both sides of the road, there were large bungalows. Sometimes the yogi walked into these bungalows and well-guarded houses. No one checked him. I also followed him, and no one stopped me. It appeared that we saw everyone, but no one saw us. In this way, we went beyond Lawrence Garden. I had never visited this area of the city before. He then took me to such strange places which I had never seen. He took me all over Lahore. Sometimes we went up and down a number of 2 or 3-storied buildings. No one questioned or stopped us. He then took me through various classrooms of Shreve's College, where professors were moving about and classes were in progress. No one questioned or stopped us. Having taken me all around the city, he came at sunset to Shah Alami Gate Square and sat near a shop. Here there were many sects of sadhus sitting in groups, but he did not join any group. He sat in a secluded corner. People placed before him many things as offerings, but did not even seem to know what was laying before him. His eyes were fixed in some distant vision and would not even wink. It appeared he saw the whole panorama of the universe in a vision of deep ecstasy. I stood at a distance admiring him. I was not aware that someone might be looking at me. It was getting dark, and I suddenly remembered that I must say my evening prayer, Hridayas. When I finished the evening prayer, I could not find the yogi anywhere in that place. I anxiously searched him all round and could not find him. In utter disappointment, I came back to Naba House, my hostel. Without spreading the bedding, I lay on the cot in order to get some sleep. I did not eat nor drink anything. The night passed in a restless mood, anxiously brooding over the desire to meet the yogi again. Early in the morning, my college mates compelled me to accompany them to college. When we reached old Anarkali, one of my friends expressed his desire to buy a watch. We all went to a watch seller's shop. I was anxious looking out, lest I might get a chance to see the yogi. I was just thinking of him when the yogi suddenly appeared before the shop. He stood there and smiled at me. I felt so helplessly drawn towards him that I followed him. I even left my books there, and completely forgot that I was to go to college. In a fit of hypnotic attraction, I followed him again. As on the previous day, he first went to the garden foundation. There he appeared to stand in meditation. I could not resist going near him. I went forward and bowed to touch his feet, but he held me up with his hands. I stood there, dumbfounded, like a statue, while he walked away. He had gone only a short distance when I regained my consciousness and followed him. Without describing the details, it is sufficient to say that I followed him all the day, remaining about 5 steps behind him. He sometimes attracted me and sometimes repelled me, but I kept on following him. He did not speak a word. He had been observing silence since many years. I had firm faith in the following words of Kabir. Saith Kabir, leave not the footsteps of a saint. Follow the path he shows. Thou shalt become pure on seeing him, and will remember God on meeting him. So I followed him and went on the path shown by him. At that time, I took these lines of Kabir literally and understood them in their plain meaning. As on the previous day, I saw wonderful buildings and palatial mansions and many other sights which I had never seen, even in a dream. Like the previous day, the wanderings in wonder, Wonderland ended in the same place at sunset. My faith in him had increased, and my mind was about to drift away into strange paths, when suddenly something unexpected happened. The yogi appeared to have renounced everything and was observing sounds for many years. Worldly goods did not attract him at all, and I also believed that he did not eat anything and was probably Bhavanhari, one who sustains himself on air. People offered him fruit and delicious foods, but he did not even look at them. Suddenly, I saw a shocking sight. A man brought an Indian pipe for him, and without any hesitation he began to smoke. On seeing this, I was disillusioned. My tender faith in this his saintliness was shattered, and I felt the very earth slipping under my feet. I fainted. There was a great commotion. I do not know how I regained consciousness. As soon as I got up, I turned away from him. The yogi did not care for anyone, and who had maintained silence for many years spoke to me, saying, "Well, is that all you can tolerate? You have been tested in such a short time. Your faith is shaken, and you are turning away from me." I replied, "I cannot have any more faith in you, even if you become the very image of God now." And I uttered this couplet. I considered him a saint, having swan-like purity. That is why I sought his association. If I knew he was a hypocrite like a crane, I would have kept away from him all my life, says Sheikh Farid. After saying these words, I left the place. A man came running behind me, and after overtaking me, he said, "Listen, friend, the yogi who has never talked to anyone for many years and has never cared for anyone has called you back. Why are you turning away from him? It is indeed your great misfortune that you are leaving a saint and recluse who has attained such a high spiritual state. He is a Kashmiri Brahmin of high caste, and he has been observing sounds for many years. As a recluse, he wanders about deeply absorbed in supreme spiritual state. For the first time after many years, he has spoken to you. What has made you turn away from him?" To this I replied, "No matter how great a saint he is, I must judge him by the ethical standards of Sikhism. His birth in high Hindu caste and family is not what really matters to me." Guru Nanak says, "The humblest among those of humble birth, the lowliest among the low caste, are my friends and brothers. What have I to do with the rich and proud?" "What evil have you seen in him?" the man asked. I said, "I am not concerned with the evils of any man. He does not appeal to me. My faith in him is shaken. I find him hollow and weak. The image of his saintliness has been demolished from my mind. What is the necessity of discussing it beyond this? You may go your way. Leave me to my fate." The man had to depart. I went to Gobag and sat there for my evening prayers, which I recited in a deeply meditative mood. After that, I prayed to God thus, "O true Lord, today thou hast saved me, this bewildered child, wandering in search of thee, from the wrong path through thy infinite mercy. It is thou who awakened in me this deep thirst and yearning. It is thou who hast made me passionate seeker of your presence. Thou alone can test and accept the deserving. Thou alone can help in fulfilling the aspirations of my love. Bless me with a poised faith in the Guru's wisdom. May I achieve association with thy true saints and mystics, and be thoroughly grounded in the Guru's supreme ethical code of conduct. This prayer restored my peace of mind. I came back to my residence and went to sleep. I got up early in the morning, and after taking my bath, I left my hostel with the idea of visiting a Sikh temple where I could join some holy congregation. I suddenly made up my mind to go to the Gurdwara, Shaheed Ganj, built in memory of Bhai Taru Singh, the martyr. When I reached the gates of Bhai Taru Singh's Gurdwara, I met a very saintly old Sikh with a white beard. I greeted him with folded hands. He gave a pat on my back, and blessing me, he said, "Now go into the temple. The Guru's blessings is with thee. It is good that you are not attracted by the smoker yogi. Go inside the temple, and you will see the holy Guru Granth Sahib, the divine word of the Guru, which is the source of true illumination in this dark age. Follow it, and you shall be liberated. Seek its sacred presence every morning and read the hymns every day. After saying these words, the mysterious saintly sage with the white beard disappeared. Overwhelmed with renewed inspiration of love, I entered the shrine, bowed before the holy Guru Granth Sahib, and read a few hymns. I do not remember which were they, but they inspired me with high spiritual ideals of Guru's wisdom. From that day, reading at least one passage from Guru Granth Sahib and reflecting on it became a part of my daily worship. I got frequent opportunity to meet and serve the Sikh Sanghats. The secret treasures of divine knowledge and the Guru's wisdom began to intuitively reveal to me, and as all other knowledge appeared to be false knowledge, I could not apply my mind to secular studies. The examination started. Those were the days when spiritual aspiration and thirst for knowledge of the Guru's philosophy were deep and profound. Every moment of my life was occupied by religious thoughts and emotions. Even while answering examination papers, a wave of spiritual emotion would overwhelm me, and my pen stopped writing. I lost all consciousness of the fact that I was answering a question paper. I could not answer the paper any further. The pen would not move. What could move it? Who could move it? He who holdeth the pen was absorbed in something else. My mind was so deeply absorbed in divine love that no one dared to disturb me. In this condition of passionate thirst, I somehow passed the time. Father received all the news about me. So he came and took me away. He tried to divert my mind to something else. He procured an appointment of Naib Tahsildar for me without consulting me. I will relate in some other letter how I had to pass the time.